You may be seated. Except for Nola, who I'm going to invite forward to join me for the sermon today. The Lord be with you.
Also with you.
Now, before we get started, I want to make sure you can all hear Nola. Nola, would you mind just sharing with us your full name?
Niola Lucia Tripolis.
Could you all hear that? Let's try turning up her volume. And let's try giving your name once more.
Niola Lucia Tripolis. That was my given name.
How about that time? No. All right, if we could go a little higher still, that would be great.
It's a good thing I know my name.
Yeah. Hey, there we go. All right. So where were you born?
I was born in Australia.
And that name, which I cannot repeat, is that an Australian name?
No, it's a Lithuanian name.
A Lithuanian name. So your parents are from Lithuania?
That is correct. They were both born and raised in Lithuania.
And did they meet in Lithuania?
No, they met in a displaced persons camp in Germany.
All right. So to be clear, your parents are from Lithuania, but met in a displaced persons camp in Germany, had a child who was born in Australia, who now lives here in the U.S. and speaks with an American accent.
That is correct.
All right. So perhaps you could walk us through the steps of your life as to how all this came to be.
Both my parents are born and raised in Lithuania. My father was away from the country attending school, I believe in Norway. He didn't really talk much about it. My mother's family was a prominent family in Lithuania. My grandfather, my mother's dad, realized that during the war, World War II, when the Russians invaded Lithuania, that they needed to leave the country. So one night they put three layers of clothes on their body and fled their home country and left everything behind and walked, took whatever means of transportation they could find, and went to Germany. They had to cross through East Germany to get to West Germany and wound up in a displaced persons camp, which was the American sector. There were different sectors. And it was there that my parents met, and they got married, and my older sister was born, and that was in Hanna, Germany. Then after the war, there were a lot of people, obviously, in these various camps, and different countries opened their doors for these refugees, and my parents chose to immigrate to Australia.
Out of curiosity, do you know why Australia?
I have no idea.
Why not? Okay, so your parents fled, met each other in this displaced persons camp in Germany, and then became refugees who resettled in Australia.
That is correct.
But then how did you end up here?
My mother's family immigrated to the United States, and that was her parents and brother and sister. And she said she missed them a lot and couldn't quite assimilate into the Australian lifestyle. Wasn't very comfortable there. So I had a younger sister at that point. My younger sister was also born in Australia. So they packed up what they could and left Australia, found a sponsor to support them in the United States. And without a fork to their name, they immigrated to the United States and settled in Long Island next to my grandparents. Wow. For a time being.
So I asked you to share this story today because the first time I heard it, I was struck by how similar your father is to Joseph in today's gospel lesson, right? Joseph has to flee his home country because of the threat of violence, just like your father had to flee his home country of Lithuania because of the threat of violence, a threat which became an actuality. Both he and Joseph took refuge in another country for a time, Joseph in the land of Egypt, your father first in Germany and then in Australia. And both your father and Joseph don't get to return to their home. Both end up moving to the place where their wife's family lives. All right, Joseph is not from Nazareth. That's where Mary's from. And he ends up moving there just like your father ends up moving to the United States, even though he has no tie to it, but his wife's family is there. Now, in the gospel, we get very little of Joseph's internal monologue, right? It doesn't go into his feelings or what he's thinking. when the angel tells him to move from place to place, fleeing danger. And so as a result, it's easy to sort of imagine Joseph as sort of stoically making these decisions, moving his family without any fear of the unknown. And so I wonder, you know, for you, for your father, do you have a sense of what it was like for him to make those moves to these places he had never been before?
Well, my father grew up in a family of 13 siblings. He didn't realize that any of them had survived the invasion. It was until my grandfather showed my dad a Lithuanian paper after we had immigrated to the United States, and they listed the names of people that were still alive. And he realized that he had one brother and one sister still alive.
One brother and one sister out of 13.
That is correct.
What happened to the other 13?
They were all resistors to the war. So they were shipped over to Siberia and killed.
By Stalin, presumably.
Yeah. And he established communication with the one brother and the one sister. Yeah. And, he just established communication with them. And periodically, we would put together these care packages for the nieces and nephews that were there. And they would send pictures of these, of all of them decked out in these clothes. And that was a hardship for my parents because they had to also pay the duty for all these things that were sent over because they couldn't afford them. And I came to find out when I got older that they sold all those things on the black market. Now you have to understand, my father's family was a resistor to the war. So they were not allowed to live within the confines of the city. They were set apart and had to live outside of the city limits. I don't know what the distance was. And they were set apart there because that was an example to the people that were living in the city that had the comforts, that if you didn't toe the line, you'd be sent out there. It was in 1969, when I graduated high school, that my dad was reading a letter, and he got very emotional because that was the year that my father's brother and sister had first gotten electricity. They were entitled to all the comforts of the city, but they had to work to get those out to themselves. Wow. And I think it was shortly after that that I was reading, well, my dad was reading another letter where his brother was pleading with my father to send some kind of medication over there. And I said to my dad, I said, why don't you just do it? He said, well, you don't understand, he says. The Russians will open up every parcel, every letter, and read it beforehand. And once they realize what we're sending, they will not allow my brother to get it. And he was very emotional about that. I think his brother died shortly after that. Wow. So that was my dad's family.
So once again, I'm struck by the parallels in Scripture in that, right, Herod has this fear that he is supposed to control this land, and the people are supposed to be loyal and obedient to him, and yet these magi come from a distance and say, well, we've seen a star that shows that there has been a new king born for this land, and Herod looks around and says, well, I wasn't just born. And he looks at his own kids and says, they weren't just born. Mm-hmm. And so out of his fear that his people will not be loyal to him, he commits this act of atrocity where every child 2 years and under, every male child 2 years and under in Bethlehem is killed. And to say, praise be to God, your family got out of Lithuania before these atrocities. And Joseph, Mary, and Jesus got out of Bethlehem before these atrocities. But I think of so many who are left behind who did not escape and suffered because of what at the end of the day is one man's fear, one man's fear of the unknown. And I see that, and Stalin as well, right, that idea of these folks who are not on board with my understanding of how the world should be, of my understanding of how I want to run this country. They're resistors, so I will either kill them straight out or punish them as an example to everyone else to toe the line. And there is in that sort of this sense of You're either mine or you're nothing. And I'm struck in the scriptures by how Joseph rejects that, right? It's not only that Joseph is unafraid to move to a different country, but Joseph is unafraid to accept into his life a child that is not his, right? He discovers that Mary is pregnant and it's not his kid. And yet an angel of the Lord comes to Joseph and says, take the child anyway. It's a gift from God. And Joseph does that. And my understanding is that your father shares this similarity with Joseph as well.
Yes, he does. My mother used to live next door to my sister, and my sister took care of her, and periodically I would go out there and I'd say to my sister, I love you dearly, but please go do something. And I would take care of my mother.
And now, at what age are we talking about
here? I was 58 years old.
Okay.
When we had this conversation.
Oh, and here's a picture of your family, the congregation can see. Out of curiosity, which one are you?
The middle girl.
You're the middle one? All right.
The middle girl. My mother had a perm fetish then. We all had perms.
All right, so you're 58 years old. You're taking care of your mom.
I'm taking care of my mother. And we're watching the evening news, and they had some kind of a broadcast about abortions. So we got in this discussion of, you know, different scenarios where one would condone an abortion. And I finally said, well, what about rape? My mother burst out crying. And when she calmed down, she told me that shortly after they had moved to Lithuania, that she was raped by a security guard where they were living, and I am the product of that rape.
You yourself are?
Yes.
And you said when your family had moved to where
was Australia.
It? To Australia.
Yes.
That's where it happened.
That's where it happened. I asked her if who knew, and I said, do my sisters know? She says, well, Judy, my oldest sister, might know. She says, I might have slipped something to her, but I'm not sure. I said, what about Dad? And she says, yeah, Dad knew. I said, what did Dad say? Well, you have to understand, my dad was a man that didn't mince words, and everything to him was black and white. And he said, this is what she said, he said, it's not the seed that makes the child, it's who and how they're raised, which is something I can truly envision my dad saying. And here I am.
And here you are. Now let me ask you, I imagine it was a very different thing for Joseph to hear, first of all, okay, Mary's gonna give birth to a child and you're not the father, but take that child as your own anyway. And then a very different thing for Joseph to hear, okay, because you have taken this child as your own, now the king is going to try to kill you. And I can imagine a man in Joseph's situation saying, you know what, it's not actually worth trying to raise this child. I'm not signing up for this. Do you think there was ever a time when your father said, you know, maybe it's not worth raising Nola?
No. The reason I say that is because after I was born, I was very sickly. I couldn't keep anything within me, and I kept losing weight and losing weight and losing weight. My mother says the doctors had pretty much given up hope on me and said, just, you know, go home and, you know, be comfortable. My dad did everything he could. He went and found goat's milk and brought it home. And eventually they worked together. And they could have both said, you know, this is not meant to be. Let's just let this child die. But though they said they worked really hard to find something that I would keep down in my stomach. And finally they settled on something and I started gaining weight, much to the doctor's surprise.
Yeah, wow. And let me also ask you, you know, as I look at this photo, right, visibly you don't look different from the rest of your family, but did you ever feel like you were treated differently?
You know, I wasn't like any the other two sisters or brother. I kind of got more from my dad. I mean, I'm not genetically his, but I got more from him than genetics could ever give me. Huh. I'm pretty much black and white. I don't mince words. Sometimes it gets me into trouble. You can ask my daughter. I was shorter than the other siblings. I used to get in big arguments all the time, especially with my dad, who loved a good argument.
Yeah.
And there was one joke, though, in that when I was growing up, because everybody knew I was kind of different than the others. And I would always, like in these arguments, my sisters would scream and say, "No, just lighten up, you know, my dad's turning beet red, just drop it." Well, I wouldn't. And so the joke always was, my mom would say, "You know, you were just mixed up with another baby in the hospital." "But that's okay," she said. "We love you anyway, and we're going to keep you." And that was kind of a joke that wasn't said once or twice. It was said often and often in situations where I literally was doing something that was not like the other kids.
And yet it's interesting to me that you say, of all the members of the family, you were most like your father, who was right the one member of your family that you weren't biologically related
Correct.
To. Yeah. It is amazing how the spirit works that way.
Well, it tells you that it's not genetics that make, it's like my dad said, it's not the seed, it's how and who and how they raise them.
Which is such incredible wisdom. And I can imagine many men who would simply say, you know, walk away from such a situation, or who would be afraid of such a situation. And in the scriptures, we see Herod, who is that man. And so I wonder, from where do you think your father gained his courage, his faith, and his wisdom?
I can only speculate. I mean, I'm sure his parents raised him with good moral values, which he had. But I can only speculate that he and my mother, having seen such atrocities and knowing that his family had been killed, that he probably thought, you know, okay, this isn't the best situation, but let's turn this situation around into a good one instead of perpetuating all the bad that, you know, is around in the world. That's just my speculation. They didn't talk a lot about it because of things that happened to them in the war. As my mother said, it was just very, very painful, very painful. She went back to Lithuania several years after my dad had died and saw where he was buried, and she saw where she had grown up and the house that she'd grown up. And she looked up there, she said, "That was my bedroom," but someone else was living there. It wasn't her house anymore.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting that you talk about that experience of suffering and loss from the war, perhaps giving your parents a level of compassion. And the book of Hebrews today talks about the ways in which Jesus is not ashamed to call each and every one of us sisters and brothers. And because Jesus is unashamed to call us sisters and brothers, it says that Jesus wants to share our suffering, wants to share our suffering so that he knows how to care for us in the midst of our suffering. Just like I imagine your father, having suffered loss of his own family, knows that he doesn't want to have another family experience that loss. And just as it talks about Jesus as the Son of God dying so that we might all call God Father, so too that idea of your father having lost a family and so saying, "This child I will call my family."
He's actually listed on my birth certificate as my father.
That's beautiful. And you say your father is now buried back in Lithuania?
Yes. His dying wish, he was 55 when he died, and his dying wish was to have his ashes sent back to Lithuania. And you have to understand, Lithuania was still being ruled by the Soviets at this point, the Communist Party. And it took my mother the better part of a year and a half to get permission to have his ashes sent back there. They interrogated his sister that was left behind and her family, wanting to know why this request was coming through. And they finally did get permission to send my dad's ashes back there. He is buried in the family plot where his brothers and sisters are buried. And my mother said that they had a beautiful ceremony for him when he was sent over there. I actually, believe it or not, I found an article in a Lithuanian paper after my dad died. My name is listed in there with my husband's, my sister's husband, and just, you know, in the Lithuanian paper there that he had passed away.
Now let's see, when was he buried there?
He died in 1977, so I assume it was 79, right around there, because it took over a year.
And so it would be, what, another decade before Lithuania would get its independence?
Yes, and I jokingly say that because my father's family were resistors, that they were in the soil rumbling it up. Yeah, it was 1990 that Lithuania got its independence.
Yeah. And your father was there for that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, I want to thank you.
And I want to thank you for showing me the correlation between my dad and Joseph. That's really special to me now.
Thank you. It's really special. I will speak for the congregation. It is special for us that you were willing to share that. You know, there are some folks who don't want to share the pain that their family has gone through. And yet Isaiah says, I will recount the wondrous deeds of the Lord. And to say what you have shared with us is a reminder of the way that God acts through individual people. To say, God spoke to Joseph, and Joseph listened. He acted with courage to take care of his own family, to take care of a child that wasn't biologically his. And in doing so, he brought freedom to the whole world. And to say, that is not a story that happened once 2,000 years ago, because God speaks to each of us every single day. And I am so grateful that you can share with us the ways in which God spoke to your father and in which your father has changed the world in ways that we can yet imagine. So thank you for recounting the wondrous deeds of the Lord.